What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you doing? It is March 26th, 2020, which means that the only thing that anybody seems to be talking about is the coronavirus. And that's understandable, of course, at this given this time. And man, I have debated about doing a show about it specifically, just because there's so many people talking about it. There's so much information yet to be discovered and processed and looked through that it's almost pointless to do a show. But I've kind of changed my mind on that only because I think back to 9/11 as an example. And I know how I feel about 9/11 now. And I know that at the time of the event, I take no pride in saying this, but at the time of the event, I believed the official story. I still was not aware of the sort of nonsense that the American government and its allies partake in. I was blissfully ignorant at that point. And so I'm thinking about this current situation of the coronavirus and thinking that it would be, it's just interesting to have my thoughts and on, you know, saved in a digital format somewhere to, you know, for me to listen back to at a later date, for all of us to listen back to see how we felt at the time. I don't remember exactly how I felt at the time of 9/11, except that I was angry and I was confused and all those things. But I think it would have been interesting to have a conversation recorded at that time. I was living with three roommates in Manhattan Beach, California. We woke up, we saw what was going on. It was crazy. We watched the news for a long, long time. We talked about all kinds of theories and all that stuff. But, you know, I don't have a recording of that. It would be fascinating to look back on it. So I decided that I'm going to do this show on the coronavirus, and maybe one day I'll look back on it, you'll look back on it and say, we can analyze where we were right about things. We can analyze where we were wrong, how we were off course. We can laugh at how ignorant we are in this moment currently, that we didn't know that X, Y, and Z was going to happen. So it's just sort of a taking inventory of what we're currently going through, how I feel about it. You know, and I got that conspiratorial side of my mind that, of course, kicks in anytime there's something like this. My default these days, these years, you know, in the last 15 years or so, my default has switched to distrusting the official story because it's the official story. I also want them to tell me tell us what the official story is. That way I can know for sure where the lies are, because the official stories are always a lie. The mainstream corporate media are whores. They have no credibility. They are run by psychopaths. They are the people on your nightly news are puppets that are reading scripts. They have no, they're not journalists out there digging into the truth. They're getting scripts handed to them to read by people that have an agenda. So the corporate media cannot be trusted. Whenever they tell you anything correct, it's by accident or it's part of an effort to sell you a much bigger lie in the future. So with the coronavirus, people have asked, well, how do you feel about it? Well, I mean, I feel like at this current moment, it is overblown. I don't like to see anybody dying from it, but it's a disproportionate reaction based on the number of deaths current. Now, I understand that there's like an incubation period and there's not testing really happening in the United States. And maybe once the testing happens, then the numbers will skyrocket. And that may all be true. And I may be eating my words for saying it the way I'm saying it. But at this current moment, March 26th, 2020, I don't see the response as being proportionate to this virus, because I'm still looking at the virus in terms of death toll. And I'm not wishing, please let me be frank, clear about this. I'm not hoping for a higher death toll. I don't want that. I don't want anybody dying. What I'm saying is that the response that we've got, in my opinion, is not justified based on the current death toll. And the current death toll, I think, is like 1,000 people in the United States. And every single one of those 1,000 people is important. I'm not trying to minimize their death. But like Joseph Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. And what I'm doing right now is I'm just talking about the statistics. I'm not talking about the human beings behind this. 1,000 dead people is, that's a lot of dead people. But not compared to the reaction by the media, by the government, and by the public, when we compare this to the number of people during this time frame that would die from, the flu, which is no joke. So there's so much going on with this story. There's so many angles to cover. It's hard to really know exactly where to begin. But I think where I'll start is with something that can't be overlooked, right? It simply cannot be dismissed. It can't be minimized. It's not getting any play on the nightly news, but as you know, the nightly news is not an accurate barometer for what is important in this world. And that is Event 201. Now, for people that aren't familiar with Event 201, it is a simulation that was run in October of 2019 by a group of people that included the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and military was involved. Some of the economic institutions of the world were involved in this. And I'm going to read you the scenario for Event 201. Now, this is not, I didn't make this up. I didn't concoct this simulation that they're running. They did this. They videotaped it. This is not me speculating about this. I'm going to read this from their website, and people can go look back and see what the scenario is all about. As far as you can watch the video of it. You can, just so you know, the website I'm going off of right here is centerforhealthsecurity.org. And then Event 201, the scenario. And I'm going to read it. This is what they were simulating about 3 months before the coronavirus broke out in Wuhan, China. Event 201 simulates an outbreak of a novel zoonotic coronavirus transmitted from bats to pigs to people that eventually becomes efficiently transmittable from person to person, leading to a severe pandemic. The pathogen and the disease it causes are modeled largely on SARS, but it is more transmittable in the community. In the community setting, by people with mild symptoms. The disease starts in pig farms in Brazil, quietly and slowly at first, but then it starts to spread more rapidly in healthcare settings. When it starts to spread efficiently from person to person in the low-income, densely packed neighborhoods of some of the megacities in South America, the epidemic explodes. It is first exported by air travel to Portugal, the United States, and China, and then to many countries. Although at first some countries are able to control it, it continues to spread and be reintroduced, and eventually no country can maintain control. There is no possibility of a vaccine being available in the first year. There is a fictional antiviral drug that can help the sick but not significantly limit spread of the disease. Since the whole human population is susceptible, during the initial months of the pandemic, the cumulative number of cases increases exponentially, doubling every week, and as the cases and deaths accumulate, the economic and societal consequences become increasingly severe. The scenario ends at the 18-month point, with 65 million dead. The pandemic is beginning to slow due to the decreasing number of susceptible people. The pandemic will continue at some rate until there is an effective vaccine or until 80 to 90% of the global population has been exposed. From that point on, it is likely to be an endemic childhood disease. So, there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the fact that 3 months before the Wuhan-located coronavirus came out of nowhere, they simulated an outbreak of a coronavirus transmitted from bats, to pigs, to people that eventually becomes transmittable from person to person, leading to a severe pandemic. What a coincidence. What a coincidence that they ran a simulation simulating events that might happen. And then those events wound up happening in almost the same way. Now, in this event 201 scenario, the disease starts in pig farms in Brazil. Well, they've changed that. In the actual thing, it starts with bat soup in China. But everything else is the same, except it says it's first exported by air travel to Portugal. Well, that would make sense from Brazil. If it started in Brazil, you would go to Portugal, seeing as they have ties to one another, with Portuguese being the primary language spoken in Brazil. And then it says it's exported by air travel to the United States and China. All right. So in this scenario, the only thing about it that's different is that it starts in Brazil as opposed to China. But if you swap those two things out, you'd have the exact scenario playing out just like it was role played. Now, where have we heard that before? Where have we seen drills go live? Where have we seen simulations come true? 9/11, where they were running 40 different drills simulating terrorist attacks that had hijacked planes, and then the exact same thing happened at the exact same time. We had that in the 7/7 bombing, when Peter Power did two different interviews on BBC, where he said that we were simulating an event in which two tube stations were blown up by bombs. And while we were simulating the event of those two tube stations, those identical, exact same tube stations blew up at the same time we were simulating it. So we had to switch from drill to real world. We saw it in the Boston bombing, where the Boston Globe on their Twitter account announced two different times within 2 minutes of one another that there was going to be a drill simulating a bombing at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, and then a bombing happens at the Boston Marathon, a fake bombing, by the way. So, what? I'm sorry, but forgive me if this causes me to put on my tinfoil hat, but I'm getting a little tired of these simulations simulating events that happen exactly like the simulations. I mean, it's almost as if they're not organic, that they are created. I wonder if that's the case. You know, so if this was the first time that we've had a, you know, a drill go live or a simulation pan out, then I might be willing to dismiss it. You know, I might be willing to just say, well, that's a hell of a coincidence. But, you know, they, you know, coronaviruses have been around for a while, and yeah, you got to role play these things. It's reasonable to, you know, I might subscribe to that line of thought. I might. But I'm sorry. This has happened far too many times for this to just be dismissed. And then you take into account who's behind Event 201, and you have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And if this is the first time you're hearing about Bill Gates being one of the most dangerous people on the planet, then I encourage you to do a little bit of research into who he is and what he's out for and what he's doing and who his family is. Because Bill Gates is the enemy of humanity. That is not an understatement. This guy is very dangerous. He masquerades as this nerdy guy who just wants to help the world and wants to prevent diseases with his vaccine and his, you know, and he's joined the Giving Pledge, which is a fucking tax shelter, let's be honest. Bill Gates is a maniac. He is that supervillain that is in the movies that is plotting to destroy humanity, you know, in those movies where like all the Marvel heroes come and defend it. Bill Gates is that guy in real life. I know everyone sort of says Jeff Bezos is, cause he kind of has that, you know, he's kind of got that Tony Stark look to him, but Bill Gates is a eugenicist. He has talked openly about this. I'm talking about this as if I'm speculating. I'm not speculating about this. I don't have to. Bill Gates has been open about this. He gave a TED talk on a stage in front of other human beings with video cameras recording it. And it went out to millions of people, in which he talked about if we do a really good job with our vaccination programs, we can lower that number. The number he's pointing to at the screen on the screen behind him is total world population. We can lower that number by about 10 or 15%. The population of the Earth, as far as we know, is about 7.5 billion people. So if you're talking about 15% of that number, Bill Gates is saying that if we do a really good job with our vaccines, we can lower the Earth's population by about 1 billion people. Well, help me understand this. I thought vaccines are supposed to keep people alive. Shouldn't his math be, if we do a really good job with vaccines, we can raise that number by 15%? Meaning keep more people alive? That's not what he said. He wasn't drunk. He wasn't on ecstasy, you know, with glow sticks in his hand, caught at a weak moment where he starts telling his buddies about his plans for depopulate. He said this in front of everybody. He wants you to know this. He wants you to understand what he's talking about. The Gates Foundation and their relationship to vaccines is not to make people healthy and not to keep people safe. It is a depopulation agenda. How do I know this? Well, the Gates Foundation has worked with an organization called Gavi. And they have been thrown out of this, of the country of India, a country with over a billion people, because the vaccines that they were bringing in for polio gave 47,500 people a form of polio after they were vaccinated. India said, get the fuck out of there. Take you, all your people, and take your vaccinations and get out and don't ever come back because you're not helping. Which, of course, he's not trying to help. So when Bill Gates is involved in Event 201, role-playing the outbreak of a coronavirus, and then 3 months later, there's an outbreak of a coronavirus, I think it's reasonable to grab Bill Gates and drag him down to the police station and start asking him some questions about what is going on here. Because the time for us to be naive about this and give these maniacs a free pass is over. He's involved in something very nefarious here. His background shows it. The way he talks about it shows it. And what is he proposing as the solution to this problem that he and his buddies have created? Mandatory vaccinations. What a surprise. Right on schedule. But not just any mandatory vaccinations. He wants the vaccines loaded with a very, very small microchip that can help to track who has taken the vaccine and who hasn't. You know, to make sure that it doesn't spread. Now, if you are stupid enough to take a vaccine, an untested vaccine for anything, but in the context of this, for the coronavirus, which is undoubtedly coming, they're talking about RNA vaccines. In fact, these are vaccines that have not been tested on human beings, but they're talking about skipping that, bypassing that, and just going straight to human trials. Look, if you're dumb enough to do this, then you get what you deserve. I'm sorry. I hate to be so blunt about it, but wake up. Wake up. You can look back on Aaron Russo, who was a film producer and a filmmaker. He made a documentary called Freedom to Fascism. And in that documentary, he talks about his relationship with one of the Rockefellers, Nick Rockefeller, and he said that he had a good relationship with him and that he liked him a lot, but Nick would tell him some things that were concerning, and Aaron would say to him, what's this all about, man? What are you doing here? What's this for? And he said, well, and Nick Rockefeller's answer was, well, the goal is to get everybody in the population microchipped, so that you can keep track of them and so that we can, manage them. He wants to get everybody micro. Now, I'm not sure exactly when this documentary came out. I want to say it was like, I'm not sure, 2005, maybe. I think it was, I'm not positive. But, you know, 15 years ago, probably 10 to 15 years ago. This you can go back and watch him talk about this. The purpose, what they're trying to do is get everybody microchipped. Okay, keep that in the back of your head, right? Fast forward to 2020. Bill Gates runs an event called Event 201, simulating an outbreak of the coronavirus, which then winds up happening just like they simulated it, with a little variations. And then what does he push for? Mandatory vaccines with microchips in them. Are you starting to understand that maybe there is an agenda here, that there is a plan here, that perhaps this is not playing out as organically as maybe we are led to believe? I think if people are listening to this, I think if you're the type of person that finds topics like this or shows like this interesting, you probably are already a bit suspicious about the media. You're a bit suspicious about Big Pharma and you are definitely suspicious about the role of people like Bill Gates and the Rockefellers. And the Rockefeller, you know, if you've got Nick Rockefeller talking about this with Aaron Russo, just understand that he's part of the Rockefeller family, and the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation work very closely together. They are, I would say that the Rockefeller Foundation has taken this as far as they can go with it, and the Gates Foundation will take the lead moving forward with this. It seems to be that there's a transition in place, but they're both, they're very similar in what they do, how they operate, what they're pushing for. And what they're pushing for is the removal of most of the people from this planet. They hate you. They are not looking out for your best interest. The Gates Foundation is not going around the world trying to save people. They're going around the world trying to sterilize people. It's another thing that's happened with the vaccinations that have been that the Gates Foundation has been slinging across the globe. A lot of them have turned out to have sterilants in them. What a surprise. If we do a really good job with our vaccines, we can lower this number by about 10 to 15%. You mean we do a really good job with our vaccines by putting sterilants in them? Oh yeah. Well, that would start to lower the global population. So we've got to take a look at who is giving us the information and what their agenda is. And that's something that the casual media consumer doesn't usually take into account. If they're watching, you know, ABC News, they think they're getting the right information, and you know, and with any good lie, you know, the bulk of it is true, and then with a lot of, you know, deceptive comments sprinkled in there, the mainstream media, they don't care about you. I mean, newsflash, they fucking hate you, and they have no respect for you, and they lie to you every day without giving it much thought. And they're allowed to. I think it's important for people to remember that in 2012, Obama passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. And what that did was that legalized propaganda in the United States. I'm not being, I'm not joking when I say that. What it did was it allowed the government a certain number of hours per week that they are allowed to use propaganda against the American people. Now, the Smith-Mundt Act, the original act, was not set to expire. It wasn't like 2012 was the end of the Smith-Mundt Act and they had to go in and read. None of that stuff had to happen. They chose to do that. They went in and they changed it. And they called it the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. And it actually gives the government the right to lie to people in the United States only for a limited number of hours, which is really courteous of them. And look, it's not like as if they weren't lying to us before that. Okay, let's be clear. But it legalized it. And so you've got to remember these things when you're looking at the current situation of the news media and the government. And the government and the media, you know, sometimes, you know, Trump kind of battles with them. And I would say that's kind of theater. I think he legitimately despises CNN. I despise CNN too. But I also have no illusions that Fox is telling me the truth or MSNBC. But the media and the government work hand in hand, despite Trump's pushing back on them. Because the media frames this political theater as something that is real when it's really not. You know, the Republicans and Democrats pretend to fight with each other and they hate each other, and that is political theater. That you're watching a performance. It's massive performance art, because these people all have the same donors. They all have the same lobbyists that approach them. They want the same things. They all go play golf together. They all go to Davos together. They're all friends. They need each other's support. They make it look like they're fighting, so that all of us retards pick a red team or a blue team, and then we cheer for our team against the other one. But none of that stuff matters. None of that stuff is real. The media and the government work hand in hand. So when you know that the government now has the ability to legally lie to people through the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, you have to understand that they didn't put that law in place to not use it. They don't go through those exercises of changing the laws just for the sake of changing the laws. They change laws because they intend to do something new that they haven't been able to do before legally. So, when they legalize propaganda in the United States, you better bet your sweet ass that you're going to get some propaganda in the United States. And I would say that what we have now with the coronavirus hype and scare and lockdowns is propaganda. Now, is there some truth in it? I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Because, like I said, with any good lie, you've got to have a little bit of truth and, you know, and a little bit of lies. So, and to be fair, they're pretty good at this. You know, they're not great, but they're pretty good. They know how to ramp up the people. They know how to get panic. Americans are very fearful. Hell, we've been scared to death for, you know, ever since the CIA took control of the media in the 60s. Maybe even before that, I would say probably before that, but certainly from that point on, we've been lied to and scared about everything. You know, if we don't get involved in Vietnam, then the Russians, you know, the domino theory. Oh, you got to get under your desk. I realize that was before the 60s, but you got to get under your desk because the Russians are going to launch nuclear missiles at us. You know, they like to terrify us. They like to put subliminal messages into their news broadcasts as well. They like to use sound as a trigger mechanism to get your brain, you know, that's why they do the breaking news alerts that have like that da-da and like that sound that goes off. It like conditions you to like, oh shit, I got to pay attention to this. This is important. There's a sound. I mean, they wouldn't do it if it wasn't they wouldn't do the sound if it wasn't really important. So now I have to, so we're like Pavlovian dogs being conditioned to respond to these triggers. And the media has been doing this for a very long time. By the way, the media, if it were up to the media, there'd be a school shooting every week. They love it. Don't let them tell you any different than that. They love the drama because it sells, because people tune in, people are interested in that. So the media has used this in conjunction with the government as the excuse to create what is known as medical martial law. Now, I did an interview with James Corbett from Corbett Report where we talked about medical martial law. And then he did a video after that called Medical Martial Law 2020. He released that on March 21st of 2020. And in his little over an hour video, at the 55-minute mark, you can go in and you can hear a clip from the interview that I did with James, where we talked about that specifically. We talked about the theory or the possibility that, you know, if you were trying to come up with, if you were, you know, a despicable, evil, psychopathic government that was trying to control the people, how would you go about it? Would you use traditional martial law? Troops on the corners with APVs and tanks rolling down the street and people going door to door saying, stay in your house. Well, yeah, you could do that. I mean, we saw a form of that during the Boston Marathon, bombing, when they went through that one town and just rolled troops through and went door to door telling people to, you know, not come out. That was, you know, on a smaller scale. So you could do overt martial law, where you just have people being forced to stay in their homes by troops. But, you know, the ratio needed of troops to people would have to be pretty high. But what if there was a different way to do it? What if you convinced the people to stay in on their own account? Because of an invisible boogeyman that's coming to get them, that they have to stay in their house. Well, I mean, it could work, right? But you'd really have to sell it. And then you'd have to let the social engineering and the social conditioning do the rest of the heavy lifting, which is the peer pressure, person to person. Don't you come out of your house. If you come out of your house, you're going to get us all sick and we're all going to die. So then you've got neighbor checking neighbor. That's when the ratios work out a little bit for this. You don't have to have 20 million troops on the streets controlling 340 million Americans, because now you've got everybody snitching on each other. Now you've got the nosy neighbors watching to make sure that, you know, Bob down the street isn't breaking his social distancing. He's having a barbecue and there's too many people over there. I better call the police. You know, this is how it is really done. And they know this. And they role play this. And you think at Event 201, they didn't talk about how this would all play out? Of course they did. They mentioned that they talked. I mean, they know that they laid out how this was going to go, and then it went the way that they laid it out. So of course they know it. It's almost as if they're engineering it. Ooh, what a crazy idea that these people might be engineering it. All right, let's take a break for just a minute so I can tell you about our two sponsors. Scribd offers unlimited ebooks, unlimited audiobooks from major publishers, and unlimited magazines, all for $9.99 a month. It's a great deal. You can actually sign up for 30 days for free, no charge, cancel whenever you want if you don't like it. It's an amazing resource. It's a lot cheaper than Audible. They offer unlimited amounts of information here. If you're like me, you geek out with this sort of stuff. To be able to have access to all these audiobooks, regular books, and everything. If you're into conspiracies, if you're into JFK, if you're into aliens or Bigfoot, or, you know, the sinking of the Lusitania, it's all in there. They've got all sorts of information on that. So check out Scribd. If you like it and you sign up for it, it benefits the show directly. We do appreciate that. But also, if you're into that sort of stuff, you're probably, like me, way into documentaries. I geek out. I've seen everything there is to see on Netflix, it seems like. And what's great about CuriosityStream is that you have access to literally thousands of documentaries. Award-winning types, exclusives, originals. You can watch them anywhere. You can cancel your service anytime. It comes in high-definition quality. There's unlimited streaming of thousands of shows. You can stream it on your laptop, your TV, your phone, your tablet. You can even view it offline. It's $19.99 a year or $2.99 a month. That is a small price to pay for acquiring additional information. If you're listening to this podcast, then you are interested in non-traditional information. You're seeking it out. Go take a look at CuriosityStream. The link is in the description box below. You sign up with them, it directly benefits the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Thanks for supporting our show, and thank you for supporting our sponsors as well. Now, why might they be engineering it? Well, a theory that I threw out to James Corbett was, you know, the global economy has been artificially pumped up on steroids from quantitative easing, which is a fancy word for money printing by the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve has been creating, you know, with quantitative easing 1, 2, 3, 4. Then they changed the name of it. Then they said it's repo purchases, you know, purchases in the repo market. Adding liquidity to a system. Well, if you have a system that is working well, you don't need to constantly add liquidity to it. The problem is that they have juice the economy up on steroids, and everybody knows, just like the guy, you know, the steroid guy, at some point you're just going to blow your arms out You know, it's just going to end badly for you. You can't shoot steroids into a person over and over and over and over again without there being a price to pay at some point. And the same goes for the economy. And by all accounts, the economy was sputtering and the wheels were coming off, which is the reason why they have to keep injecting all this money. And they're trying to keep this Ponzi scheme going. But it becomes quite obvious that it's falling apart. And the bankers are going to blow up this economy, the world's economy, once again, just like they did in 2008. It's coming again. I talked about this in my presentation at Anarchapulco in February of 2020. It was part of my discussion was that the economy of the world is about to be taken down and it's not going to be accidental. And I don't have ESP. I don't have a crystal ball. And I'm not a member of the Psychic Friends Network. I just understand what's going on. I see what the banks do. I see how they operate. They pump up and inflate massive bubbles to draw everybody in. Then they pop them, destroy the economy, and take back tangible assets for their fake paper that they've printed. And more importantly, what they take is they take more control. And in situations where you have an economic crisis, there's panic. And the banks use the excuse of this, you know, we have to mitigate this economic collapse that's coming. Because the government don't step in with bailout money, then, you know, what Hank Paulson say? You know, the economy will collapse by Monday morning if we don't get $700 billion in TARP funding, plus another $16 trillion that the Fed created out of thin air and loaned to the banks at 0% interest. If we don't get this, it's a gun to the head, right? Hey, you the government, need to help us, the banks, because if you don't, it's going to be much worse than it already is. Sure, we're involved and sure, we're part of the problem, but there's no time for arguing about that now. There's no time for assessing blame. Mistakes were made. I don't want to live in the past. I'm looking for... No, this is what they do. They did it in 2008, and we all freaked out and said, those fucking banks took all the money. They caused the problem. They profited from the problem. They are the reason for the problem. And then when the problem happens, they go to the government and they get made whole. We'll never let that happen again. Well, guess what? We're letting it happen again. They learned some valuable lessons from 2008. They learned that there's no limit to the amount of money that the government will give them or the Federal Reserve will print. There's no limit. The only problem that the banks had with 2008 was that they only asked for $700 billion. Had they known better, they would have asked for $7 trillion. And you know what? They would have gotten it. Because what's happening right now with this coronavirus epidemic, engineered disaster, is that all of the corporations are now learning from the bank's playbook, which is the banks asked for money last time in this bailout and they got it. Now we want a bailout. Everybody wants it. The banks want it. The cruise ship industry wants it. The cruise ship industry, who registers all their ships in Liberia and Western Africa, but what, they want a tax break from the United States? Get the fuck out of here with that. If you guys want to go out of business for your floating islands, you know, then that's on you. You know, maybe you should have saved some money. If you're a corporation, if you're a publicly traded major corporation, and over the last 5 years, you engaged in a stock buyback program where you used the profits that you were generating to buy back your own stock to force that price to go up so that your senior executives would get higher bonuses, and you're going to ask for a handout? How dare you? How dare you? The balls on those people to ask for that. And they're going to get it. They're going to get it. They'll get it. It doesn't matter. They have no shame. You can't shame the banks. They have no shame. Doesn't work. You can't shame Jamie Dimon or Lloyd Blankfein, they don't give a shit. They're not worried about perception. So this is where we stand at this current moment. You have the Federal Reserve has agreed to print $14 trillion. That's $14,000 billion to prop up the economic system. You know, the Federal Reserve is the problem, and they're offering the solution? Sorry, not interested. The problem is the system, right? You've built a faulty system. I mean, faulty for the people, but it works perfectly for the bankers and the central bankers involved. It's working exactly as it was designed to work for them. So when I say faulty, I don't mean that they built it in a way that's faulty. They built it. It is working exactly the way it's supposed to work. The problem is who created the system. And it's the bankers that created the system with the help of a complicit and bought off government. They created it. It's working fine. The problem is the way it was designed, it doesn't benefit the people. It destroys our purchasing power as they inflate the currency, which is why, you know, your grandparents used to be able to go to the movies for a nickel or buy a loaf of bread for a nickel or all those stories. And now it's, you know, $6 to get a loaf of bread and $12 to go to the movie because the Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply. So it takes more dollars to get the same tangible goods because the value of the currency has dropped. This is not even very difficult to understand. Even if you're not a numbers guy and you're not a finance person, you don't really need to be. All you need to know is that the more there is of something, the more if you're a guy who's got a basket of apples and nobody else has apples, you can charge more for those apples. If everybody on your street has apple trees and they're growing apples and the apples are growing on trees, you can't sell apples for very much because there's an oversupply of them. So the same thing happens with dollars or pesos or yuan or whatever. The more that's out in the system, the less value each unit has. This is economics 101. It's not very difficult to figure out. So when the government is printing tons and tons of money under the guise of it being used to inject it into the economic system for liquidity and purposes like that, in a lot of times, not every time, it gets a bit technical on the finance component. I'll leave that out. But a lot of the times, that lowers the value of the dollar or the unit of currency. It just does. It just you've got too much of it in the system. The problem is that because our banking and money printing and, you know, and the Fed, because they're the ones in charge, there's no transparency. So who knows how much money's in the money supply? You know, they talk about these numbers, the M1, M2, you know, but who really knows? I mean, honestly, it's like unemployment numbers. They say, oh, unemployment rate's 4% or 3% or 5% or whatever. And you go, well, first of all, I don't believe the source. Second of all, your calculations change all the time in figuring these things out. So anyway, what the bank says about how much money is in the money supply or the government says cannot be believed. So when the Fed just decides to create $14 trillion out of thin air to inject it into the money supply, a couple things happen. One thing is that the people start saying, hey, man, if it's that easy for you to create money out of thin air to, you know, prop up these banks, what about taking care of us? You know, the people that need the help right now. And when the money doesn't come, when the Fed doesn't print up money to give to the peasants, they don't want the peasants to have money. They don't want that. They don't work for us. They work for the banks. They were created to service the banks. They're not there for us. So everyone going, God damn, the Fed, they're printing all this money and they're giving it to the banks. They're not even giving it to us. Of course not. That's not their job. They're not designed to do that. Their job is to help the banks. Us? If they gave a shit about us, they wouldn't have manipulated the money supply for the last 100 years. They don't care about us. So don't waste your time complaining that the Fed isn't helping out the average person because the Fed has never helped out the average person. They don't give a shit about the average person. They don't give a flying fuck about you or me or anybody except Wall Street and Washington, D.C. That's how it works. That's how it's always worked. That's how it will continue to work as long as we keep a central bank in here, a privately run Federal Reserve central bank. We're gonna get what we get as long as we have that. So what's happened? Well, what we're seeing is a corporate takeover. We're seeing the Fed injecting money into the banking system and into the government, and then the government turning around and giving bailout packages to companies like Boeing. Now, Boeing used all their profits, not all of them, but a fair chunk of their profits over the last 5 years to buy back their stock, which is why their stock was, you know, in the mid-300s, because they were buying it back and the share prices were going up. Executives were getting bonuses based on that. It's a way to juice the system. It's a way to make your company look a little bit better than it is. They could have not done that and just had cash on hand for, you know, a rainy day or a crazy pandemic. But they don't do that because they know. They don't think. They know that if they get into a bad spot, the government will subsidize them. The government will take care of them because Boeing's too important to go out of business. It's a military industrial complex provider, and they can't have that go out. So what winds up happening with these so-called important companies is that they privatize the profits and they socialize the losses. It means if they have a good year and they make a lot of money, they keep that money. But if they have a bad year and they lose a ton of money, they go begging to the government for a handout. And they get it, and the government gives their money, which is supposed to be our money, to these companies to help prop them up. You know, too big to fail. That sort of shit. So, as long as that system is in place, and that system is in place because of corporate lobbyists and the nature of politics, and campaign financing and interlocking board of directors and senators retiring from the Senate and taking lobbying jobs with Lockheed Martin and playing golf 3 days a week with important clients and getting paid $600,000 a year to do that. This is legalized bribery. This is how it works in the United States. Lobbying is legalized bribery. The revolving door between regulatory agencies and the industries that they're supposed to regulate is a form of bribery. Presidents that could get out of office and get paid $400,000 to give speeches to Goldman Sachs is a form of legalized bribery. It's what it is. It just is. And people that aren't aware of that, you know, how dare you? Wake up, man. Wake up. This is what's happening. This is how bribery is done. You can't just go with a big suitcase of money and give it to a senator. What you do is you say, you know, it'd be great if you voted this way on this piece of legislation that we have. How's the wife and kids doing? It'd be great to have you, you know, have you met Bob? Have you met Bob? Yeah, you know Bob. You used to work with Bob. Remember when he was in the Senate? Well, he works with us now. Yeah, Bob. Hey, Bob, you should go out to lunch with the senator, Senator what the fuck, you know, and take him out. And what happens at that lunch is you got it. Man, I'll tell you what, I got the best job with this company here. They've set me up. All I do is I go around, I do a little talking, I go on MSNBC and talk about how we need to push for war. And then, God, you know, Lockheed Martin pays me a fortune every year. And they know what's up. So the bribe doesn't have to be overt. It's implied. It's obvious. This is what you get when you get out. You take care of us and we'll take care of you. We see that in the pharmaceutical industry when the head of the CDC leaves the head of the CDC and then go takes a $5 million a year job at Merck. You think that's accidental? You think they found out about this person from their LinkedIn account or a headhunter? Come on. This is how it works. And speaking of that, speaking of the CDC, it's important for people to understand what the CDC really is, the Centers for Disease Control, also known as the Centers for Disease Creation, which is a more accurate name for it. It's a vaccine company masquerading as a regulatory agency. They own vaccines. They own patents on vaccines. They make money from selling vaccines. The CDC sells vaccines. That's where they make their money. Okay. They expanded the vaccine schedule. CDC is the one that's in charge of that. I wrote my book, The Octopus of Global Control. If I found a way to make it mandatory for every person to buy 78 copies of it, like the way the CDC has mandated that every kid has to get 78 vaccines, I would have a totally rigged marketplace. It'd be the greatest. It'd be the greatest sales pitch I could ever have. You have to buy my product. I'm making it mandatory, and I profit from it. That'd be great. If everyone was forced to buy that many copies of my book, that'd be great. Also, how good would my future books be? That'd probably be pretty shitty. Why would I make them? Why would I put the time into it? Why would I put the time into writing a good book when everybody's forced to buy it anyway? Who cares? What are you going to do? Complain? What are you going to do? Sue me? You can't. You can't sue the vaccine industry. You can't sue Big Pharma for vaccines. After 1986, when they went to Congress and got the laws changed to make it illegal for you to sue the vaccine industry. Why'd they do that? Because they were losing their ass in lawsuits, and they had to. They told Congress, we're going to go out of business if we don't change this. And so Congress, you know, they bought a couple politicians, and they enacted this law. And now when your kid gets sick, gets hurt from a vaccine, and you want to go sue Merck or Pfizer, you have to go to the vaccine court. And if you run the gauntlet there, which is damn near impossible to do, and you get a payout, that payout comes from a fund that isn't actually even funded by the pharmaceutical industry. It's funded by 75 cents from every vaccine that people pay for goes into that fund. And then that fund is used to pay out vaccine injured people through the VAERS court. And the stipulation in the VAERS court is that if you talk about the payout that you received, you are liable for 10 times that amount in damages to be clawed back from the pharmaceutical industry. So you can't talk about what you got. So vaccines are safe. Vaccines are no problem, right? Well, let me ask you this. Why have they paid out $4.2 billion in damages through that vaccine court? The court that almost doesn't ever pay out because of the hurdles you have to overcome just to get paid. If it was a true system, that $4.2 billion, you could tack on another two zeros at the end of that. That's how many people should be getting paid from that. So the reason why I bring this up and the reason why I go down this vaccine path, and this is not meant to be an episode on vaccines, is because of the CDC's role in this coronavirus scare. So you have to understand the history of the CDC, because the information that we're getting in our news is coming from five of the least credible sources out there: the Chinese government, Chinese media, the American government, the American media, and the CDC. Five institutions you should not trust on anything. Now, you might be wrong, and you know, they might get some things right and you might be wrong, but who cares? Your default should be set to, I don't trust them. That is the only way to approach the CDC, the American government, the American media, the Chinese government, the Chinese media. Do not trust them under any circumstances. They have a huge problem with lying about things. So what we have is medical martial law, just like James and I talked about. They've made us demand it, which you have to give them credit. These evil geniuses, they have found that it works much better when you have the people demand their own enslavement. You just have to lie to them. You have to scare them bad enough. You have to tell them that the end is near unless they do X, Y, and Z. And then once you put that system in place, then you let the societal peer pressure take over from there and let the CYA cover your ass component of this kick in as well. When you talk about restaurants closing, I'm talking before the government is mandating this, just when it was all optional. You get the NBA shutting down, saying, well, listen, we don't want to be responsible if this is we've created an environment at these games where this can spread. We don't want to be held accountable for that. So then the NHL is sitting out there going, well, you know, maybe they're thinking, well, this isn't a huge deal to us, but we don't want to be blamed for this either. You know, what if somebody, you know, what if they say, oh, we track this back to a New York Rangers game and this guy was there at that game and he infected all these people and then the lawsuits start. So hockey's out. Major League Baseball wants no part of this. MLS soccer, you know, they want no part of this either. All the European leagues start to close. So then it just becomes, you know, look, regardless of whether an industry or a company thinks that it's real or you know, they real or invented, it almost doesn't matter at that point, because then they don't want to be on the hook if something bad happens where they're now getting sued for it. So now they're saying, well, out of an abundance of precaution, we're just going to shut down. Well, now it's even gone past that, because now it's government saying that you have to shut down. I live in Colorado. I live in Denver, outside of Denver. And I got a text message last night and another one this morning saying that we are not allowed to leave the house. Now, I'm not leaving the house, but it's not because they're telling me not to leave the house. I just don't have anywhere I need to go because everyone in my family is home. You know, we're all stuck here. Schools are closed. So this is quite possibly the perfect way to control the population. Scare them to death and make them control themselves. You couldn't devise a more ingenious plan than this. But there's something else that my conspiratorial mind goes to as a possibility. And I didn't come up with this on my own. And a lot of people have been talking about this and I don't have the answers. And I'm not saying that this is part of it, but I think it's important for us to at least consider the fact that we have a problem with 5G rolling out, and it is not unreasonable to examine if 5G is playing a part in this as well. We do know that there are dangers associated with the rollout of 5G. It is a Trojan horse. It is not what it appears to be. It is not there for you to download porn three times faster or to be able to stream Netflix in high definition. It's not about that. It's sold like that. I mean, we're told that's what it's for. You're going to have all these things, but it's not. We're talking about millimeter wave technology, the same thing that when you go through those body scanners at the airport where you put your hands above your head and walk into that little tube and it zips around you like an MRI. Those things are really dangerous. And 5G uses that same millimeter wave technology. Is this flu actually a cover story for 5G illness? I don't know. I don't know for sure, but we have to start to consider a variety of things. because I do know that people are getting sick from coronavirus. I don't know that the numbers are as accurate as they say. I don't trust the numbers because I don't trust the source. But let's just say people are getting sick. There's been a lot of people that have tied the symptoms of 5G exposure to the symptoms of coronavirus and saying that some of them match up. I don't know. It's something to consider. Another thing to consider is that we could have locked down this country, 2 months ago, and it might not have made a difference, because what if the coronavirus is in the chemtrails that have been sprayed all over us? And before people start to roll their eyes and tell me I'm out of my mind for talking about chemtrails, I would like to point you to a video interview deposition that, well, I don't know if deposition is the right word for it, that John Brennan from the CIA was sitting in front of one of the Congress, one of the oversight committees, I think, and he admitted the aerosol injection program that the CIA has been involved in. He admitted to it. So you guys, all the people, and I don't think it's this audience, but all the people out there that may hear this and say, oh, you and your chemtrails are conspiracy theorists. Shut the fuck up. Do your own research. John Brennan from the CIA, who, look, let's be honest, you can't trust him, but he's now admitting it. Okay. They're real. We're not imagining this stuff. Stop. The burden of proof of us having to prove that we've proved it. They've admitted to it now. So just stop with the conspiracy theorist tag about chemtrails. They're absolutely real. We're being sprayed with things. Who's to say that coronavirus wasn't in there being sprayed on various regions? You know, is it a bioweapon? I don't know. It's on the list. It's on the list of things that we have to consider. It's a possibility that it is a bioweapon. Did China invent it to send to the United States? Maybe. Did the United States invent it to send to China? Maybe. It's probably more likely that way than the other way. But, you know, I don't know for sure. And like I said, part of the reason for this episode is to just to talk this stuff out and look back on it, you know, a year, 2 years, 10 years from now, and see if I am smoking crack and talking out of my ass, which is entirely possible, or whether, based on my writings and understanding of control structures and how devious these government agencies and pharma and military and media is, maybe I'm onto something. Maybe I'm not out of my mind. Maybe I'm ahead of the curve. Maybe all of us in this alternative media world, maybe we're getting it more right than we're led to believe. You know, I think we are, unfortunately. I'd love to say, I mean, I'd sleep better if I just thought this was some organic virus that came out of nowhere, swept the globe, caused a bunch of panic and disruptions, and then our concerned government, you know, locked us all up for our own good while they made the tough decision. I wish I believed any of that. I don't believe a word of that. I don't. So, unfortunately, I'm left to speculate about what this could be. And that's why I have bioweapon on my list, you know, engineered bioweapon, not an organic sort of, came out of a wet market from people eating bat soup and that shit. Yeah, you know what the bat soup story sounds like? It sounds a whole lot like the Benghazi story, where these people were radicalized by Susan Rice talking about how they were watching YouTube videos and they got radicalized. I mean, stop. This is a litmus test to see how fucking stupid people are. If they believe that shit, they'll believe anything. I have to consider it's a bioweapon. I have to consider it's intentional. because the people that are telling us the story are pathological liars that have a tendency to do things like this. I don't trust Bill Gates on anything. And if anyone would know something about viruses, it certainly would be the guy that invented Microsoft Windows. I mean, let's be honest here. Nothing has more viruses and more buggy than that. So we're working this out. We're talking about it. We're thinking about it. We're doing the mental gymnastics and the exercises that we need to do to try and figure out what this is and where it goes. I'll tell you where I think it's going. I think James Corbett might be right. And in our interview, we talked about this. And he said he almost hates to put this out into the world because he's afraid of what, you know, he's afraid of giving it any energy. But he also said, you know, I know that social engineers have thought about this. And he made the point that what if this martial law came and went within a matter of weeks and it wasn't all that bad and things kind of returned to normal. And then we went out about our lives over the next couple of years. And when the topic of coronavirus and martial law came up, we responded with, yeah, we had it and we had martial law and it wasn't all that bad. You know, it wasn't as bad as we thought it would be. And things, you know, were different and things are different, but martial law came and went and it wasn't that bad. And it was and what if that was used to prime us, to set us up, to get it in our heads, to get it in our way of thinking that, you know, it's not how we envision it, where it's like troops on every street corner, forcing you to stay in your home at gunpoint or everything. It was soft martial law. You know, it was Netflix watching and it was, you know, arguing with idiots on Twitter. You know, it was a lot of, that's how it was. That's how I remember. And it was kids having to do virtual school online, but things went back to, what if it was just to set us up and kind of ease us into viewing martial law in a much different way so that the next time around, we don't put up a fight. We don't see it coming. We don't prepare ourselves. We don't get ourselves that worked up. Oh, here it comes again. It's martial law again. Oh yeah, it must be that time of year. That would be genius of the social engineers and the maniacs running this world to set us up that way. And we know that they like to make incremental progress on things like this, you know, the totalitarian tiptoe, as they say. So it's something to think about. And I clearly don't have all the answers. I'm just some dummy talking about it. But I come from a place of suspicion towards the official stories of everything. And I recognize manufactured panic when I see it. And I think that there's nothing more dangerous than a herd of very scared Americans, because they will act in irrational ways, because a lot of them don't understand how devious the government can be. They still believe the mainstream media. They still trust politicians. They still think that the banks are a safe place to put their money. So they don't even understand that there is a plan here, that there is some devious plan. They haven't even considered that. So there's a lot of people that are just, you know, going to have a hard time ever thinking that this could possibly be organic. Or I should say that they'll have a hard time thinking that this is something created and overhyped by the government and the media, because they'll assume that, well, they wouldn't do this to us if it wasn't real. And that's where I diverge from a lot of these people. Yes, they would do this to you for no good reason. They absolutely would. And the sooner people understand that, the better off they'll be. Don't make the mistake of looking at your government as somebody that's here to save you or take care of you. They have shown no reason for you. They've given you no reason to believe that they're here to help. If you had a, if you went to a therapist and you described the relationship that you have with the mainstream media or the your government, it's an abusive relationship. They're abusive towards us. So we need to wake up to that. If you guys want to get a hold of me, you can do it through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. If you like this podcast, share it. Algorithms are not going to be counted on to help spread any of this. They'll see it as disinformation, you know? So get the word out there and follow me on social media too, if you'd like. Take care, everybody.